Welcome to America Works, the only podcast that wants us to fucking try. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
You like
yes,
that?
Yes,
like that
sir. Intro? Yes, sir. Anything you want.
What'd you think of this episode? Episode 2. It's season 3, episode 2, chapter 28.
Episode's a hot mess.
It started out a hot mess, and then I kind of settled into it.
I like the fact that they could keep an egg symbolism running clean through.
They did. I don't know what it means,
so my
but
big,
they kept it.
My big problem with this episode is they made, which was, let's get some stuff out of the way first. It was directed by John David Coles, which we talked about last episode. He also directed the last episode.
Uh-huh.
And written by John Mankiewicz, who is a long-running writer of many hit shows, including this one. He's written 4 episodes of House of Cards. He's also an executive producer. He's also written on House MD.
Who isn't an executive producer on this show?
I don't know. He's kind of gotten in a house rut because he's got House of Cards, House MD, going old school Hill Street Blues and Miami Vice, among many, many, many other credits. What was I saying? Oh, yes. My big problem with this episode was that this felt like Claire's spelling bee moment. Do you remember that talk show in the first season where they needed Frank to have a crisis with the education bill?
Yeah,
and he went
I owe you a something,
right,
and then he
right.
goes completely out. Yeah,
the
what are you even talking about, Frank?
Right, it just was like so far from believable that this guy would get into that particular word whisker and argument. Her completely losing her shit at someone she knew should have goaded her or wanted to goad her, although he did kind of go back on his word. He said that he wouldn't get in the way of her, but he kind of did.
Yeah. And then I see what he was doing there.
Sure. I thought he was just being a dick, and that's, you know, like this whole the military is relevant. What do you mean the military is irrelevant?
Sure.
Just standard grandstanding to drive you crazy in U.S. politics.
Yep.
But I just thought that it was embarrassing how badly she handled that situation from front to end. And I don't believe that Claire Underwood would handle it that badly.
Hmm. Okay.
But again, you know, for the first time since season 1, I felt like that the writers needed a particular crisis to happen right now so they could force this. If they wanted to make a recess appointment, make the fucking recess appointment. Don't degrade Claire as a character to do it.
Yeah, I don't have such a harsh outlook. Going into that, it immediately started grating on me, and I was like, oh, man, I don't like this scene at all. By the end of that scene, I had, you know, sussed out exactly what he was doing, and I kind of understood a little bit more, and I didn't have such a problem with it. It's still not the greatest part of this episode.
Can I let me give you another problem that perplexed me.
Okay.
Claire comes home to find Frank defeated, sobbing on the floor by his desk.
Yeah.
And she sob fucks him.
Mm-hmm.
To me, Claire Underwood comes in, sees this, says, if you can find it in your power to scrape yourself off that floor and accompany me to the bedroom, it might be worth your while. This is like, we've seen what happens when he it becomes kind of like a, you know, crawling into a ball of self-pity. It's a turnoff to her. She finds it distasteful.
She's done something very similar to this before. I mean, when she sees him in moments where he needs support, this has kind of been her way to support him.
But do you see Frank Underwood sobbing because he called people for 4 or 5 hours and didn't get a single supporter? Which I felt also shocking.
It was shocking.
Like a sitting president of the United States can't call, like, you really?
Not with the way Frank Underwood has conducted business in the past, no.
Man, it just feels like that any president would not bat a zero. That seems highly unlikely.
You'd get the weaklings who want to just support the incumbent.
Yeah, you get somebody that's like, my career is, you know, you get the guy that just got sent a dick pic to some 18-year-old co-ed, all right?
It strikes me as the Democrats have been talking amongst themselves behind his back for the past 6 months since he got into the presidency, and this is the fruition of that. Like, they are all solid around this idea.
Mm.
Like, what's his name? I don't remember the name, but the guy who delivered the message in the meeting, he has been working behind Frank's back the entire time. Much like Frank would have done with him.
Well, that was Bob Womack. No, Terry Womack is the guy that was the head of the Black Caucus. And I think he's now the minority leader or majority leader, whichever. I think it's a minority leader. The Democratic leader. Anyway, it wasn't Bob's idea. It was that Terry Womack's idea. Yeah. So this was like treachery coming from within his own house. And then Jackie, who is stung from not getting a juicy appointment off of her helping, you know, kind of strong-armed into it, but helping Frank out last year, she backs their play 10 minutes after first hearing it. And then she wants to be vice president on Frank's ticket that she thinks is a loser. I don't know. There's a lot of things that I don't really understand the people's motivation. And I don't understand Remy and Jackie's little game and what she is doing with this Alan Cook man that she's just kind of used. It's like a naked attempt to make Remy look feel jealous.
Yeah, I felt like that was just showing that she's, you know, out on the town like she was before with Remy a little bit. But more importantly, what is she doing with the reporter? What is she doing with Ayla?
That's a very good question, because
I don't know what her game is.
What card she has to play, you know, she just squanders it by getting the press involved. I mean, I don't know. She's got her own agenda, and it's not for the Democrats, and it's not for Frank Underwood. Underwood. It's for her own self, and I don't know.
And she wants, she also, you can tell that she wants Frank to think that she's going to be on his side at some point.
The other question I have is, why does Remy feel like he's trying to split the middle between Frank and her? Because he is kind of in keeping Frank in the loop about what's going on with her, but he also didn't play dumb about where the leak, definitively where the leak came from, when he knew for a fact that it was from Jackie, because he talked to her about that right before he called Frank. Mm-hmm. So why is Remy... That seems like a dangerous play to make. You just said to Frank,
but
Frank asked in this episode, I intend to run.
Yes. If you're Remy, that has to have you worried that no one is on his side. Do you think maybe he doesn't have the faith in Frank to win this thing and he wants to continue on after the fact? Because we have seen him be a mercenary before.
Sure.
I mean, half of the series he has been a mercenary.
Yeah. It's
mercenary for oil companies, mercenary for Frank.
It's just, I don't know. I mean, Washington's a weird place. I mean, I don't have anything to base this on, but my gut feeling as an observer is you can fight a good campaign and lose, and you are still going to be seen as, you know, you could be seen as valuable in Washington. If you stab someone in the back, then even if the person that you're backstabbing benefits, they're still going to remember that you're a backstabber.
And I think that's why Frank calling all these people and not getting any positive response is such a cool thing. It's such a good thing and plays right into his track record. You know, I mean, he goes around backstabbing people all the time. The show is called House of Cards. His presidency is built on a House of Cards.
Yeah, that's true. I just feel like that Seth and Rim, I mean, even Doug, as far outside of the inner circle as he is, you know, spraying syringes in his mouth, he's able to know that, yeah, Frank has got, he's up to something. He's going to make a run around these guys' backs. Can you really build enough support for a bill and have it take positive effect and get the Americans excited enough in 6 months to stave off a political coup?
So that's the thing.
I mean, this kind of ties in with the recess appointment.
I don't know if everyone has picked up on that's exactly what he's trying to do, but I think what's happening here is he says, okay, I can't beat these guys head on, so I'm going to subvert them and take what is a terrible public opinion of me and turn it around by being brutally honest, by doing everything that those 74% of people that they mentioned in the first episode want him to do. I think that's exactly what he's doing here. He's swaying public opinion so that when the time comes, they will have almost no choice but to nominate him.
That's what I'm saying. Like, he's got 6 months to a year. Now,
yeah,
that's essentially the same plan that the recess appointment is, because I did some research on that, that presidents, it's kind of, the whole recess appointment was back in the horse and buggy days when it took weeks and months to get from, you know, Washington, D.C. to Florida.
Sure,
back to your constituents. you know, Congress recesses used to be a real thing, and the Constitution has a provision that the president can bypass the senatorial advise and consent powers, which is what all this is nomination and confirmation process, during a recess, and directly appoint people to the position, to a vacant position. However, the Senate has to confirm it by the next time before they adjourn again. So this essentially maximum puts it off a full calendar year.
Okay.
At the maximum. A lot of people don't do this option, although it happens all the time. Like, the, you know, all of the last four or five presidents have done like at least 100 of these recess appointments.
Wow. Okay.
But it's not a popular option because it normally it can piss off the Senate and it can consolidate.
But if you're doing 100, you're doing 25 a year. It doesn't seem like it's that.
Well, but some of the stuff is for minor, you know, it's like somebody resigned or you had, you know, like there are so many appointed offices in the federal government. It's crazy.
Yeah.
But anyway, what I'm saying is that it seems like the reason presidents don't like to do it is because it can consolidate support against the nomination. So it's like a surefire, like shot in it, you know, shot in the foot. Okay. The other thing is, if they do it too often, the Senate can get pissy and take matters to where they never effectively go on recess. And I guess like the last 2 years of the last Bush presidency, I believe is Harry Reid made sure that the Senate never effectively went on recess. Like there's like certain like procedures they can observe. As long as they don't go a 3 day gap of doing them, then Congress never goes off session. So there's like checks and balances and kind of internal tug of war. What she's asking him is essentially the same gamble, which I think is why he just said, okay, whatever, because he's making the exact same gamble. I'm going to force something through, bully my way through, hoping to get my way because of my stellar achievements. I don't know that I can believe that can happen in 6 to 12 months.
It's definitely a long shot. I think his plan is a last resort.
I mean, you'd have to like generate 10, and I did the math on that too. So, and I, maybe my math is wrong, but if you generate 10 million jobs and the jobs average $50,000 a piece, that's a pretty good job, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's a decent job.
Sure.
You're going to generate $500 billion worth of income to these people.
Okay. So that's his $500 billion mark there.
I'm just saying that seems like a one-to-one expenditure, jobs to dollars, and I don't know that makes a lot of sense.
No, you want to incentivize the creation of jobs, not pay for the creation of jobs, right?
Yeah, essentially.
You don't subsidize corn by just paying for all the corn.
Right. But I don't know, because these are entitlement cut programs. I also think that, I mean, there's a reason nobody wants to do this, because you can't get in front of the American people and be like, you're not entitled to the shit that you're entitled to, because we call them entitlements.
Sure.
I mean, this is the game we're playing, like you and me.
His game is honesty, right? His game is straight shooting, no bullshit honesty.
Sure, it's what we need, because it's an open joke among people our age that we're just not going to see Social Security.
Sure, yeah.
It's not, I mean, I do not plan on it being there, because it seems unsustainable. The baby boomer generation is just too big. And it's going to be too expensive, and the whole thing's going to go tits up, and we're going to be left holding the bag. That's pretty cynical, and it would be refreshing to hear a president say that, but people our age don't fucking vote, and younger don't fucking vote, and old people vote all the fucking time.
Sure.
And that's politics in the United States.
Sure. I'm unsure, especially with him just kind of ramming Claire into the UN here. I don't know that that's seen as a good PR move.
It's not. Yeah, sure.
Certainly. I don't know.
She just got defeated. And I guess that's the big, like, this that hardly ever happens, is doing a recess appointment on something that the Senate just rejected is really ballsy.
Sure. Yeah. I'm going to do this anyway. Sorry, guys. It makes me think that there is something bigger happening in Frank Underwood's head.
Oh, of course.
Like, he is shooting higher than we think he is. And
yeah,
that would be typical Frank Underwood.
Yeah, and it's kind of rare for this show to be this close. Like, they'll do this through an episode. Like, I think when the brick gets thrown, we didn't know for sure that he did it until the end of the episode.
Yeah.
But it's I feel like we're multiple episodes on, like, you know, we're going into episodes and I don't really know what his plan is. Yes, I know his plan is to do such a good job that people love him and they need
him.
But
that doesn't seem like a good enough plan.
That's not a plan. That's something you're hoping that will happen. What's the actual plan? You know, like, what is his bar? Does he need 3 million jobs? Does he need 5? I don't know. I don't know. It's a risky gamble, desperate gamble.
Yeah, I think there's more to it.
Maybe involves getting some of these Democrat leaders into garages with running cars and booze bottles.
We're going to have a meeting in the subway, guys.
Some Amtrak trains. Who knows?
All right, let's talk a little bit about eggs. I like eggs. I like omelets. I see people breaking eggs. I see eggs.
If you want to make an omelet.
What's going on with eggs in this episode? Do you have any idea? Because I personally do not.
I think it's a long way to get the whole you got to break a few eggs to make an omelet.
Really?
Joke. I do. You know, it's
that's what
it's,
they're doing.
But you know, Frank's talking about you got to balance eggs. It can't change the laws of physics. Claire is carefully selecting eggs, and at the end, she's smashing them and making omelets. I don't know how else to parse that.
So when she is carefully selecting those eggs, she also gets some very bad news about the nomination. When she gets very good news about the nomination and Frank pushing her through, she then cracks and breaks these eggs and presumably eats them.
Yeah, I mean, there might be something into the whole, like, you know, when you're trying to be nice and neat and you're trying to keep things in balance, nothing gets happened, but, you know, you finally move ahead by just smashing shit, fucking shit up.
Yeah.
But that's kind of like the whole... That's not really subtext, because that's literally what breaking a few eggs to make an omelet means.
Yes.
And you have to make everybody's... a mess to create something. So it's like...
Maybe it just frames the theme for this episode.
Sure.
I guess it could be that.
That they're going outside, they're coloring outside the lines.
Yeah. And then if you take, you know, Frank kind of palming this egg and kind of making his decision, coming to this epiphany while handling this egg, I think that could be what they're doing there.
Had a Meacham sighting this episode.
There was, yeah. He's not dead.
Apparently he's the head of the First Lady's detail, or is he just kind of like one of the high mucky mucks of Secret Service anyway?
I feel like he's a high up Secret Service guy.
Are we going to see any more Meacham in the middle this year? Because there wasn't any hint of sexuality between him and the First Lady.
I think that's a one and done.
Really?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Until I'm proven a false, until I'm proven wrong, I think that's it. I don't have a ton more to say about this episode. Well, we get more Stamper, I guess.
Yeah, what is Frank's deal with Stamper? Last episode, we thought like he's just radioactive and he just really hopes he takes care of Rachel and then dies, or maybe he'll help him along. Mm-hmm. He seems to be curious about his mental state, and he's asking Seth to check up on him, which of course Stamper immediately smokes out and resents.
Yeah.
Stamper is apparently using the syringe techniques to
control his drinking.
Yeah, control. Yeah. That's what
he is measuring his alcohol intake.
He's moderating. Like I'm going to be smart about it this time.
He might be being a little too smart. Like, you can't do that with a shot glass, buddy. Like, maybe he sees the bottom of a shot glass and he just freaks out and needs to have more.
No, I think there's something like, you know how your brain, you can hack your brain. Like, I'll smoke, but only if I'm out at a bar with some friends, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Or if I'm drinking. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'll just have one, you know, one beer or something. You can make hard limits, and then that's the hard limit you've set for yourself. Keith Richards, I'm only going to get high once a night
and survive till I'm.
That's right. I'm gonna live a long time through careful use of pharmaceuticals. Yeah. So I mean, obviously, not everybody's Keith Richards, and I don't think Doug Stamper is. I think the system is going to let him down and betray him.
You're probably right.
Probably just as Frank is starting to let him back in, because that's what it feels like is happening. He's taking an interest in, oh, these policy positions he's writing, and oh, send it on to me. Uh-huh. If he was just radioactive, I'd be like, yeah, I thought he was going to say, yeah, file 13 that shit.
Sure, sure.
Tell him I read it and that it's interesting.
Yeah, the
and
circular then, file. Yeah.
Yeah, but he didn't. There's something going on there, and I don't know what his game is.
So, all right, I think that Stamper is trying to measure and control his drinking. why does he put his gear away when Seth calls him and says, I'm going to come over after this speech? Because one vial is not going to get him drunk.
But he could maybe smell alcohol in his breath.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
I was thinking that, like, yeah, he was just like, and also maybe cause like, oh man, he's coming over here. I might be close to getting back in. I can't be doing this shit.
I'm going to abuse it.
But then when he finds out that Seth isn't over there for his own free will, but because he's being made to and all the implications of that, he's like, you know, fuck it. I'm going to squirt this right in my mouth. Because so that's the other thing is I think having a prostitute there to squirt it in his mouth was a further like hoop. Like, it's essentially the whole, like, I've done this when I'm trying to be productive at work. I set a stupid timer on my web browser where it's like, you know, you can only have it open for 15 minutes and a JavaScript locks it out.
Well, you can go fix that. Yeah,
sure. But that's the procrastinating programmer's version of having a whore come over to squirt bourbon in my mouth. Well, if it's this big, I'm going to make it this big deal. And now he's like, okay, I'll trust my. So he's already slipping in his system.
Yep.
He's eliminated the middleman, or the middle woman, the middle prostitute.
Sure. What else you got? Anything?
Do you think that's the same bottle?
Yes, I do.
So then he really...
He is doling it out.
He's doling it out. Okay.
Measuring it very carefully, yeah.
All right. The thing I was really disturbed about in Stamper's apartment, the vanilla Oreos.
Oh, yeah.
What the hell?
Now, I've had...
I mean, I get the man is the type of man that eats Greek yogurt on a regular basis.
Is happy when he opens his fridge and he sees all health food.
Sees Greek yogurt and leaks, and it's like, oh,
after
I'm
6 months in a hospital, a man comes home and wants health food.
Yes.
Fuck you, dude. Want a chocolate brownie. You want something.
This guy's a weirdo, and he gets down with vanilla Oreos.
He does. That's strange.
I think that's nobody why Claire those. Threw up in the sink. She accidentally got one of those vanilla Oreos in her mouth. Like, what is this?
And then had to eat eggs to get it out. Yeah.
You got it. Yeah. Protein up.
I have had peppermint Oreos and those are quite good.
I've had all kinds though. Like my favorite are around Christmas time and they only make these around Christmas time.
Peppermint Oreos.
Thank God because I'd weigh 500 pounds. The white chocolate dipped Oreo.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. My God, those are so good.
Those are good. They only make the peppermint ones at Christmas time too.
Mm. I've had the pleasure. I think that would be good though.
They like are an Andy's real mint, good. Yeah.
Only with some cookie there too.
Mm-hmm. Little bit of crunch in the filling as well.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Good stuff.
Come what on, Nabisco. Why can't we get those full time? It's just like winter seasonal beers. Like they're the best beer. Everyone agrees. Why don't make them all year long? Jesus. Yeah.
You could make so much more money.
Sometimes
a little restraint is a good thing, as evidenced by Stamper.
I need a syringe to inject Oreos into my mouth. Hey, I did some research. Liz had a question about the cessation or secession
from the union.
No,
are
no,
we talking about Texas.
No, like the secession, right? That's like who takes over from who and what happens.
Oh, yeah, something like that.
Okay, so
succession.
Yeah, whatever. Anyway, the 25th Amendment of the Constitution cleared up some ambiguity from this area.
I would hope
and
so.
And it basically says that anytime the president is removed from office by death or resignation, the vice president becomes president.
Okay, I knew that.
When there is a section two says whenever there's a vacancy in office of vice president, the president shall nominate a vice president who shall take office upon confirmation by the majority vote of both houses of Congress. So
he needs to kill Blythe and bring his wife in as vice president.
Well, I think he can dismiss the vice president at his pleasure is my take on this. But happened is section one was triggered when Walker left office.
Mm-hmm.
That immediately made him the president, which then it's this like Magic the Gathering damage on the stack.
Sure.
Section two then applied, which lets him now he's president. He can't appoint anybody he chooses, but it has to be approved by both houses of the Senate and the House of Representatives by a simple majority vote.
Okay.
So apparently he got Donald Blythe up there.
He's kind of a he'll dance for him. You know, he'll be his puppet.
Right. I wonder if a president can just dismiss a vice president because he doesn't like them. I know you can during an election.
It's not an elected position, is it?
It is an elected position. Well, but so that's what I'm saying. Like, I think
you vote for the ticket. So, yeah, I guess
a vice president can be impeached, but I don't think a president can just be, I don't like you anymore, get the fuck out.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot of political reasons, but I also think it's not legal.
Probably not.
Anyway.
And, you know, I mean, what Frank is trying to do here is probably not legal either, as is told to him by...
Do tell. Frank Underwood doing something illegal.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, now he's doing it publicly, right? Like, he's not trying to hide this. He's trying to just get out there and say these things that are, I think, blatantly illegal based on what she told him. Like, the lawyer, I don't know what position she is.
Remember, she's talking to the Attorney General. She is representing the United States government on behalf of this drone case that President Walker got into some hot water where an American citizen got hit.
And he's saying release the files publicly.
Sure.
That's not legal according to her, but she's going to write up a defense for it.
Well, I mean, I don't know, because it seems like the president has most of the power in the executive branch about secrecy and all that stuff.
Yeah.
And prosecution of. So is it legal? I don't know. But if the president gives an executive order declaring something, that's kind of Nixon.
She said it was a problem.
It can't be
legally.
Illegal if the president tells you to do it.
Because, oh, yes, it can.
No, I know.
Oh, yes,
I know.
It fucking can.
I know. But you get into a lot of this crazy stuff with the executive
that's
orders.
That's the excuse he used on Meacham. You don't want to know what they got up to.
Oh, God.
Well,
It involved the collector's edition White House Easter eggs.
It definitely did.
And a very non-standard basket.
Yes. Don't you dare break these. These are very valuable. Anyway, no, she says, like, this is potentially a big legal problem for us. Makes me think it's not particularly legal.
Or it could just be exposure. Like, you know, if we set the precedent that we're going to do this, then what are you going to do in the future? Like, when your drone strike goes pear-shaped and we find out you killed a bus full of orphans. Because nothing came of that.
You're right. That's still
there
lurking.
There was no blowback whatsoever. Now, is that because that was some clandestine thing?
Could be. Yeah.
But, yeah.
It's not. It's a top secret.
Definitely something to keep a watch on.
That's all I've got, man.
That's all I've got as well.
Okay. Do we have any feedback for this episode?
Not at this time.
All right. We're kind of marathoning and back-to-backing these things, so.
Yep. We might have some, down the line. Yeah. Or we might edit this and record it in some new stuff. Who knows?
We'll see. All right. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
If you do have feedback, send it to houseofcards@baldmove.com. And you can also get on our forums. We got the threads for each of these chapters ready to go for your perusal. Also on forums.baldmove.com. You can send an email to houseofcards@baldmove.com. Tweet at Jim @baldmove and follow us on facebook.com/baldmove.
Definitely. Thanks for listening. We will see you on Wednesday. Until then, I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron. See you.